Good afternoon, everyone. This is Bill Rice, President of the Web Marketing Association, and I'd like to invite everyone to our call with Marketing Sherpa talking about landing pages. This is the second time that we've had a call with Marketing Sherpa on landing pages, and our membership got a lot out of it last time. So with the new guide, we felt that it'd be a great time to do it again. So joining me today is going to be Tim McAtee, who is a senior analyst with Marketing Sherpa, and this is actually the third book that he's done with Marketing Sherpa. And before that, he was a research manager at Ogilvy. Also joining us today is Jimmy Ellis, who is director of Optimize Research. As the director of Optimization Research for Marketing Experiments, Jimmy has run over 300-plus internet marketing tests in areas such as landing page optimization, PPC, email marketing, order processing, and lead generation. So we have some great stuff for you today, and I'm going to turn it over to Tim, and he's going to get us started.
Thanks, Bill. Just a little housekeeping before we get started here. Everyone should be looking at a PDF with 29 pages. If you're looking at a PDF with 22 pages, you may need to get the updated version. The last seven slides we'll be looking at today will be user-submitted landing pages. We'll be answering some questions and doing a live examination of those pages. So if you need to get the new or any presentation, just email service@marketingsherpa.com. That's service@marketingsherpa.com. Just send them a quick email, and they should send it right back and get you going here. So let's get started. If you go to slide two, let's just give you a little overview of sort of who Marketing Sherpa is and where we derive our expertise from and why you should listen to us. For this book, we actually used over 30 sources of best of and partnered data, and we did an original study in which we surveyed 4,213 working marketers, as well as an examination of a little under 1,000 actual landing pages in real life. Took all this data, as well as quite a bit of other stuff, and put it all in. Our service department has just informed me that you can also re-click the link if you needed to get that download. So slide three. This is a chart that comes straight from our internal survey that we did, where what we did was we actually asked separately two different questions. We asked first what tests marketers were trying, and then second, how their conversion rates had changed in the 12 months prior in order to sort of back into an answer and look at which tests are most likely to increase conversion rates. And notice that at the bottom there, those who did no tests were equally likely to show an increase or decrease in conversion. So there is sort of that 20% there on either side. So what that gives us is just a good baseline or control to compare to the rest of these, where we're actually seeing all the tests. On top of that is the pay-per-click search dynamic changes, and this is really pretty interesting to note that almost 70% of companies that tried this saw their conversions increase. So that's really pretty impressive. So I guess the sort of overall point here is that any testing is better than no testing, but that some tests are, in fact, better than others. So just to dive right into that here, let's move on to slide four. What we're seeing here is this is from an actual pay-per-click search term dynamic inclusion test where Offermatica did a couple versions of this where one was just the page as you see it, and the second test version was this page. where it says you searched for Stratocaster guitar on Google. Now, what happened here was this actually resulted in a 48.35% lift in conversions, plus a higher average order value per customer from that page. And no other creative factor beyond adding the you searched for whatever it is on Google was changed. This has also been tested on B2B sites and travel sites who got pretty huge revenue lifts on a per search-driven visitor basis. Now, Jimmy, just wondering if you would care to comment on this since you're sort of the resident expert here.
Sure, absolutely. In the tests that we've run, what we find is you absolutely want to have relevance from your campaigns. Let's say it's pay-per-click or email marketing. Whatever the customer is actually clicking on, the relevance from that ad or that campaign to the actual landing page has a huge impact on conversion. So the fact that someone was looking at the Stratocaster guitar on Google, they click through and land on a page that specifically references the Stratocaster guitar, immediately when the customer comes on the page, will have an impact on your actual results because they immediately see, oh my gosh, I'm on the right page. And so it starts them off in the right step. And if you actually look at the rest of the search results, it lines up with that search term. The first one they see is the Fender Standard Stratocaster Electric Guitar, like I said. So you're serving the needs of the customer coming in and meeting their expectations.
Okay, great. Cool. Well, let's move on then to slide five. And just kind of introduce a general theme here, which is keep it simple. 42% of the marketers we surveyed ask questions in their form to obtain information that they don't actually use. So here's an example of a RegForm test that proved shorter is better. This doesn't necessarily mean that shorter landing pages will do better, but asking only for the info needed on registration forms will increase the likelihood that they're actually submitted. The winning form improved conversions 36.7%, which is, you know, if you think about it, you know, almost 40% more sales leads just by shortening the form. In this case, the form went from 15 entry fields to 7 entry fields. So I think, I mean, a lot of people want to put in demographic forms and you know, put in sort of more information. And, you know, as a research person myself, I love having extra data to work with. But it just seems like a best practice is to always wait on the non sort of business specific fields and ask them later, you know, put them somewhere else. What do you think, Jimmy?
I think you're absolutely right. We've run plenty of tests on this particular type of thing when you're talking about a form. And what we typically do is we'll put that extra information on the confirmation page or thank you page with great results. The other thing that we've noticed is when we work with different partners, they don't actually use their demographics. And so I would say 70 to 80% of the companies that are collecting that information don't use it in a very productive, usable way. And so it's actually just getting in the way in the first place. So you say keep it simple, get them through the process, collect the extra information later, and it always tends to work out better for you in terms of upfront conversion.
Okay. Cool. If you go on to slide six, this is about as simple as it gets here, 22%. And what this references is that 22% of the people that we surveyed actually still have a reset or a clear form button on their forms. This just doesn't make a ton of sense. I mean, that one of every four marketers are basically just, you know, throwing away or I mean, it's so easy for someone to come in, try and go for that submit button and accidentally hit the reset button or just not be paying attention and lose their form. And I think we've all been in a situation where we filled in a long form online, and for whatever reason, it didn't submit. And I know personally I've abandoned submitting forms that were just too hard or I just didn't feel like doing them twice. So in this case, it just doesn't make any sense to put them there. And now, originally, you know, these clear field buttons were added to help data entry people who were inputting dozens of forms at a time. But unless you expect your customers to be submitting multiple forms, it just doesn't make sense. So if we move on to slide seven, again, just keep it simple and make the eye flow easier. So if you move on to slide eight, I should kind of quantify this a bit. In terms of eye flow, Anytime you've got less stuff on the page, less clutter, it's just going to be easier for someone coming to your page to digest the information there, to do what they came to do, which is, in most cases, convert. In this case, we've got we did this observational study where we went out and we looked at I think it was exactly 978 landing pages, which, believe me, was not very fun. And we looked at all these pages and actually went through and quantified how people constructed them. And one of the things we found is that, well, while most landing pages are done in sort of classic 1-to-3 column setups, a lot more of these pages coming from search links, and this is paid search, actually have more columns than do their counterparts when you're coming from links and email ads. So what that says to us is that people coming from search are a lot of times maybe not landing on pages that were designed to be landing pages. So if you can, I mean, you really need to go through and examine where your links are going to from both, you know, paid search and from your ads, and really, you know, think about all your traffic, not just the, you know, the sort of campaign by campaign biggest clicked links, because the little stuff adds up. There's a lot more people coming in on that long tail than you might think. Moving on to slide 9, none of these are really specific to landing pages, but they all just make good sense. So the point here is to not let your web designers get too fancy if the goal of the page is to be read and not just look cool. Even, you know, well over 20 years ago, David Ogilvy was writing about making these mistakes in print ads, and there's still mistakes today. And as much as technology changes, our eyes really don't. So just if you can, you know, stay away from centered text, stay away from small, tiny typeface, stay away from, you know, gray text, and especially that sort of flipped black and white. It's just hard to read, and especially, you know, for all you baby boomers out there, you know, the eyeballs aren't getting any better. So keep that in mind, especially if you've got a 22-year-old designer that's making teeny tiny print on your forms. So staying in that vein, if we go on to slide 10, this is a really simple concept that bigger is better when it comes to buttons. And now this is from a real-life test that showed that not only do bigger buttons get more conversions, but they get more clicks, and that's really sort of where the conversions are coming from. So a good sort of test, you know, if you're thinking about this, is to pull up your landing page, walk back 6 feet, and look at the page from across the room, and if you can still easily locate the button, then it's probably big enough. If you can't, if it's not obvious from 6 feet away, then it's probably not big enough. And it's not that people are blind or stupid. They're just busy and distracted. And as a rule, I mean, even when you're looking at, you know, aggregate click performance across millions of impressions, you know, where button size is going to be the only variable, you know, even at that level, the bigger buttons are always going to get more clicks.
Hey, Tim, this is Bill. Quick question. Sure. How about a button versus a link? Have you guys done study on that also? Or just text?
Well, I mean, I suppose a bigger text link would also, you know, I mean, I'm sure the rule stands true. If you've got, you know, a text link that's in 10-point font, then, yeah, it's going to be harder to find, harder to click, harder to read. So I'm sure that, you know, if you've got a text link that's, you know, pumped up to 20 points or something, that'll definitely help increase clicks.
In my research, even text links versus buttons, what tends to happen is it's based on the actual content. For example, if you're a publisher and you have a lot of content and you don't have a call to action for, let's say, a product, a lot of times actually text links will work better in terms of click-through than buttons will. But still, once again, the rule of thumb we're talking about is actually the bigger the better. And in terms, even with the text links, if you bump up the font size, as long as you keep them looking like links so they have underlines and most likely they're blue, you'll get a higher click-through rate and hopefully some more sales.
Okay. Cool. Well, let's move on here to slide 11. So what we're looking at here is this is from our an internal analytics report on our own pages at Marketing Sherpa, showing that we at Marketing Sherpa need to optimize our internal site pages as well as our landing pages because the vast majority of our incoming search traffic is going really deep into the site. The point is that because of natural search, just because internal pages weren't designed to be landing pages doesn't mean that they aren't functioning as landing pages. The best way to optimize the top few pages that get the most natural search clicks is to do just this. Go through, pull up an analytics report, and take a look at where in your site people are coming to. Bill, what do you think? You got any advice on this?
I agree. I think we found in the Web Award competition every year that a lot of people are actually better sites are designing their pages, so understanding that people are going to be coming in from anywhere, so that there's going to be a frame of reference and some way to convert them. So it won't necessarily be a true landing page, but you're going to have the functionality to be able to capture that lead and drive them through the sales process no matter where they start.
Okay. Yeah, and again, just what that entails is simplifying. Take a look at your internal pages, and if you can simplify, do. So moving on to our next example here, slide 12. What we're looking at here is this is a press release that was sent out on the wire services with the hope of attracting traffic from people who read Yahoo News and Google News and search for terms relevant to this B2B company. Now, if you go to the next slide, you'll see this is where people actually landed if they clicked on that SEO piece. So let's see. So on this page, this page was created for the release. It was designed to be a serious informational page. It's loaded with keywords, which is great for future SEO. However, the big thing here is that instead of the vertical nav bar with distracting links to non-relevant places on the site, the marketer inserted a contact form to get some responses. And this is a great way of, flattening your chain here, making fewer clicks, fewer hoops for your customer to go through. And by putting that contact form just right up there on the page, one click away from a, link that was searched for, what happened in this case was, and this is an incredibly specific product, the chip scale atomic clock. As such, you're really searching for a needle in a haystack when you're looking for the kinds of people that are actually going to care about this sort of thing. And in this case, they got eight leads. But of those eight leads, one of them wound up being a $200 million order. So clearly, this is a kind of an issue here.
Pretty good cost per click there.
What's that?
Pretty good conversion for your clicks there.
Yeah, 1 in 8, not so bad. All right, so let's kind of move on to the next point here. So redesign for mobile. Now, what we're seeing here is that this is the Secrets of Success homepage. How it looks in a normal size monitor. And if you go on to the next one on slide 15, here's the mobile version of the same website homepage. Even if you're not doing formal mobile campaigns now, you should consider testing a mobile landing page version for email users, such as your company CEO. 9.3% of mobile users look at email on mobile devices, according to Metrics. But that would be much, much higher for B2B. You don't have to be branding here, but if your site is utilitarian in nature, it's a good place to strip it down to the most basic functions and make sure that somebody coming there, from a from an email campaign link, that sort of thing, that they're going to get sort of the bare-bones structure of the thing, and they don't have to wade through a lot of large, heavy graphics or kind of the sorts of things that are unusable to a mobile user. And I'm not sure everyone knows this, so I apologize if I'm saying something you already know, but one of the things you can do with CSS or with other types of coding is you can actually program a page to appear differently depending on the kind of screen you're looking at it on. So if somebody pulls it up on a browser that's based on their computer, it'll look one way, whereas if they pull it up on their phone or even on their TV, it can sort of dynamically detect what it's being viewed on and actually adapt to the screen. So this is really the future of, I think, where a lot of this stuff is going, and it makes a lot of sense to start addressing that now, just because even though a small percentage of your total site traffic is going to be looking at it on a mobile screen, that percentage is a highly valuable one. They tend to be the CEOs, the CMOs, and the CTOs. And you love that C-suite coming to your site, especially if you're a B2B marketer. Now, out of curiosity, Jimmy, have you guys ever dealt with any sort of mobile?
Not too many mobile tests that have led to really great findings so far. Just some preliminary tests that hopefully we'll be releasing relatively soon, but not right now, honestly.
How far down the road do you think that is, that's going to become sort of a big deal? Like 1 year, 5 years?
Well, it's definitely starting now. I think basically, as the phones develop and as people actually kind of jump on this bandwagon, there's more, there's different companies coming out with not only mobile browsers and stuff like that, but different types of services to allow marketers to use mobile as an advertising stream. As that develops, it's going to pick up probably, I would say, exponentially once there's quite a few different offerings where you can easily get your ads up there on the mobile. And I'm talking about not just your website, but almost like, you do in your Google or your Yahoo or your MSN, there will be channels specifically for mobile that will enable people to use it really easily. And then in terms of users, like I said, the technology will get there. It's just going to be so simple and easy to use your phone or your handheld device that it takes off.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait to get my new iPhone. Check it out. Anyway, moving on. Slide 16. If you can do nothing else, budget for analytics and testing. Just going through our survey results, we found that 44% of our marketers don't measure landing page test results, 40% only test at launch and leave forever, 16% don't share test results with their agency. And trust me, as an ex-agency research guy, I can tell you that I have a personal bone to pick with that one, for the simple reason that if you're not sharing if you're not sharing all the way to the bottom of your purchase funnel, from all the way from awareness and clicks, all the way down to purchase and customer lifetime value, that sort of thing, it's really hard for your agency to actually use that information and have it affect your advertising or marketing in any sort of significant way. Without knowing which ad actually improves conversions, it's just really hard to make any intelligent decisions. And we're going to come up with an example in a minute that sort of illustrates just that point. But for now, just moving on to the scariest data point, slide 17, 18% say that no one knows our landing page results. So 18% of actively, working, and these are working marketers out there with websites, have no idea what's going on. And without that just baseline of data, it's impossible to measure improvement, it's impossible to fight for budget, and it's impossible to really understand even if it's working. So clearly I think analytics is definitely going to be an underserved.
This is Bill again. I don't find that real surprising, because I think there's an awful lot of site owners and companies that are still think their best landing page is their home page. I think there's a lot of people out there that are not even using landing pages because, you know, they feel like, oh, let's just get them to the site and let the site sell, and they really miss the point. So, you know, the fact that they're not, you know, taking a look at the conversion rates and testing pages is not surprising.
Yeah, and I think the thing to remember, too, is that, you know, someone coming to the homepage might be less familiar, but generally somebody who's coming in, you know, on a link, they've kind of already been sold for the most part. So at that point, I mean, they're further down the path. So that, right, there does have to be some sort of differentiation, some sort of separation, I guess, of people coming in to make sure that you are giving them the right path to go down. So let's get back here to slide 18. Now, this isn't an actual test here, where what happened here was there were two landing pages, the short form and the long form. They both, anybody who then clicked through went to the same form. And what happened was that the only difference really, you know, between the two processes of when we were looking at conversions was just these two landing pages. So the really interesting thing that we found here is that in this case, the longer form did in fact drive more conversions overall. And it wasn't so much that it was a better page, but it drove more clicks overall. So the kind of odd thing is that you really do need to pay attention to your difference between clicks and conversions. In this case in particular, you know, if you've got an agency that's just paying attention to clicks, they're often going to choose the wrong thing, simply because, you know, if you've got more clicks coming to one page but it results in fewer conversions, it's so easy to sort of mix up your metrics and choose a loser by accident, basically. So, again, back to that point, you really do need to communicate and to be tracking these things all the way from click to conversion in order to really figure out who's the real winner.
So, hey, Tim.
Okay. Sure.
Sorry about that. What do you think about Google's analytics and even in the cross-channel campaigns in the AdWords area? Do you think that's good enough to be able to track conversions?
I mean, I can say from experience that a lot of the big agencies out there are using Google Analytics just like as individual proprietors are. And the program is definitely right for the price. And compared to some of the bigger companies, it's not really that different in terms of just getting some basic reading on just what's going on your site. So, yeah, I would absolutely recommend using that, especially if you've got nothing in place. If it's a matter of, you know, expertise or time, or you have a much larger site, then it can definitely get sort of more complicated if you're trying to track how people are coming through sites, look at, you know, user paths, that sort of thing. Or if you're trying to, say, segment out existing customers versus new customers, that sort of thing. That can get pretty complicated, in which case you're definitely going to want to, you know, pay somebody to do that for you. But if all you're doing is tracking, you know, a pretty simple, say, 3 to 5 page flow, and you've got a relatively homogenous group coming sort of through that, I would absolutely recommend using that stuff.
Great. Thanks.
Sure. All right. Well, that pretty much finishes it up for me. I think slide 20 here. This is the landing page handbook, which we wrote using all this data. I'd love it if you would buy a copy. I'm biased.
I just want to let you know, everyone, I have a copy of this booklet, and I had the last one also, and it truly has some great stuff in terms of you know, even, you know, taking a look at landing pages from a design and layout standpoint, but also, you know, really getting into some advanced strategies on how to improve your landing pages. And I think people are going to start seeing us use this much, much more when it comes time for our, the Web Award competition to launch, because we really hope to really use some of the things that we've learned in this book in the in when we redesign the site for Web Awards this year. The other thing I wanted to point out, well, actually, I know we have the email summit, but two slides down, the Web Marketing Association is going through their internet advertising competition right now. The deadline is January 1st, and we actually have a category for landing pages. So if you think you're doing it right for landing pages or microsites, please consider entering your best work into the IAC Awards this year. It's our sixth year. So back to you, Tim.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks for the plug there, Bill. Also, just, yeah, again, to mention the email summit, if you are involved in email marketing, it's a good excuse to go to Miami in February. I'm looking forward to heading down there from New York. So let's get in here to the meat of this, which I think is going to be my favorite part. We are now going to deconstruct some landing pages that you all out there have sent in. Jimmy Ellis, you want to take it away with XL Insurance?
Sure. Let me pull that up right now.
But just to sort of let people know what's going on here, the red dashed line going across the website here, that's the where the sorry the fold mark, I guess, so above or below the fold, where that appears on my screen. I had it set to, I think, 1028 by 768. Well, whatever the normal sort of most used resolution is. And I did use Firefox instead of Explorer, and you're going to see sort of later on here the importance of testing for both Explorer and Firefox, and probably Safari while you're at it. So, Jimmy, you got that up yet?
I got it ready to go. So, I mean, if I was a customer coming to this site, I'm just going to point out a bunch of things that we would change. A lot of them are actually usability-based. So when I come to this site as a customer, the first thing I want to see is give me a good, strong reason to stay here. Like, what do you have to offer? Why should I stick with this site? And right now, I come here, I see construction solutions, but there's no – it says building better solutions for the construction industry. I just don't see any value. Like, you know, building better solutions, tell me how. Use some bullet points on here. Use a good, strong headline, some bullets, and lead me into your main call to action. So when I'm looking for the main call to action or objective of the page, I look and I see all these different – sections of content, but there's nothing, there's not one clear thing, okay, I'm supposed to do this, or this is where I get help. So I'm going through the page, I'm scanning through, they're using pretty darn small font, I pipe up the font up, that first headline really isn't even a headline, it's just probably size 13 pixel text, and it's not very good. I'm going through the page, and the text is actually, if you remember Tim's comment earlier about using gray text, this is, once again, that gray text, it's not truly black, which is harder to read for people. The subheadlines within this text don't stand out very much, so it's harder to find those other sections within this content. And I'm looking at the links, and the links are, some of them have underlines, but they don't look very clickable. There's no, not that they have to be buttons, but typically links, you want to try to use blue links if you can, if it fits your color scheme, and underlines. You absolutely have to use underlines or people miss them. So in terms of this, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do on this page, but you got to start with the basics is, okay, how do we keep someone here? You got to provide some valuable content and information that will convince them that, hey, you have a solution to their problem, and then make it simple and easy for them to find it.
Okay. I totally agree with you, Jimmy. I think this is definitely just one of those sites that could benefit from kind of, you know, some buttons and just some more obvious sorts of, you know, eye flow and just a lot of that stuff we were talking about. About keeping it simple and making it bigger.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to the next one. And now this one, I just wanted to comment quickly here. The thing that really struck me before we even get into to design about this one was that the question that came along with this submission was, the goal of this page was to drive registration as well as get visitors to visit the other areas of our site. How do we do? I think that question alone sort of points out a mistake that a lot of people make, which is they have too many objectives. And on this site, you know, not only is the objective to drive registration and get visitors to other areas of our site, it's also apparently to earn ad revenue. There are three different pretty clear objectives that this site is trying to accomplish. And the thing is, I like the site. I think it looks good. I just think that it's trying to do too much. So what do you think, Jimmy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is one of the ones that we would term visually appealing, but not very effective. And it goes right back to the things you just mentioned. There's three objectives. You'll see the banner on the left. You'll see the Join Now Free on the right. And then you'll see the other content sections. But if you were to do this based on a specific campaign, you'd want to do, let's say, for example, you're trying to drive, going back to simplifying the page and the objectives. One objective, I just wanted to get people to sign up for the free account, the Join Now Free. And you design the entire page around that. So the rest of this content below that, those images would probably be gone, that left banner would be gone, and you'd really build out a really strong headline, some really good intro bullets, and scream that it's free. So when I hit the page, the one thing I can see real clear is the headline, but the headline just says what the site is. It doesn't give me any sort of incentive or benefit or in terms of what we see value proposition is like, you know, convince me why I need to sign up for your service. It's free. Why don't you see that in the headline? Those bullets right below it are really small font. I can't even read them actually on the screenshot. And even on the full size version, they're very, very, very small. You know, for example, people are not going to join before they have a good feeling or a good reason why they should join. So there's almost a sequence. You want them to go through some of your main copy and your content before they're actually going to click on the Join Now free button. So, and those are some of the quick changes I'd make on this page.
And, Jimmy, the other thing I think that I noticed on this page is while the Join Now Free button is a clickable link, and that's the primary call for action that they're trying to drive registration for, the image right above it is not a clickable image. And I think a lot of the studies that I've seen shows that people try to click on images. And there's no reason why that whole image couldn't be the Join Now Free button. Make sure that if you have images, that you make those clickable to get people to go where you want to go.
Yeah, that's an absolutely great point, because that there would be no negative effect to making that whole thing a clickable image instead of just the button. So, and that one is almost a no-brainer. Whether, you know, if you tested it, there would be no effect. There's only a positive gain out of that potential test. So I would just change it and make that your standard.
Jimmy, in terms of font size, do you find that there's a specific font size that's sort of the minimum or a best font?
The minimum that we would use would be like a 13 pixel, or which would be equivalent to like a 10 or 11 point font. I would say that would be almost the minimum. And it also depends on your niche. If you're doing anything in healthcare, anything with older people, gosh darn it, you have to bump the font sizes up. You will see conversion increases by just going from even from a 13 point or 13 pixel font to like a 15 or 16 pixel font. You will find the pages, even yourself, they're easier to read. They're easier to scan. It's actually, I would say it's almost more enjoyable, but what will happen is your test results will prove that it's actually better. So even if you don't like it visually, even if it doesn't look as neat and professional and clean, it will be a more effective page. So it's absolutely something you should test if you're not doing that already.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to be the one to save a life. Now this one, I like the fact that it's basically the whole thing was above the fold. I think just the very bottom, I didn't even put it in here, was because like the little text in the very bottom was maybe off a little bit. But for the most part, it was all on there. Now, Jimmy, you want to start us off on this one?
Sure. I mean, on this one, we actually took a look at this real quick yesterday just because it had some interesting points. The nice thing is it's a relatively simple page. There's not that many things to do, but the problems that I see are, is that of the things you can do, it's a little bit overwhelming. So if it's a simple page, but it tends to be overwhelming because you have the video on the left, you have the Reed Ajon story in the middle, the $19 million, you have the sign up or the zip code and the information on the right, and you have the three options on the bottom, which is join, tell, and give. So in terms of, you know, taking some lessons we've learned from the previous, if you can, let's keep to one or possibly a secondary objective, but one primary objective. You can have at least a secondary objective. You can have multiples, but you really want to focus them down the path that you would like the customer to go down. And this one, I would just simplify a little bit to make one of these sections, whichever one is for the company that they want to focus on, make that really clear, and then have the rest of the information in the most usable format possible. A couple of little things I would change, I'd bump the font sizes up once again. This is probably the smallest font we've seen yet. There's three bottom boxes that paragraph text is, I would say that's a 9 or 10 pixel font, which is just extraordinarily small. So there's a few things here, but in general, I would be willing to bet that the page actually does relatively well because this is it. This is the whole thing. There's not that many other things to do.
Yeah. One of the things that I really liked about this page was that the video was embedded in there. And so you could watch this video, and you know, if you weren't 100% convinced, you can watch this thing, let it tell its story, get its, you know, those emotional hooks in, and then you're still right there. You're still on the page. You still got all those options of, you know, join, tell, or give. I do wonder, though, and actually I never clicked to find out, but I wonder where that Rita Johnny story goes. And if it does sort of go off someplace random, that's bad. If, however, it keeps the same sort of look and feel and, you know, maybe just expands into a very, like, almost an identical site, just with a story in it, I think that would probably be pretty good. So just depending on, you know, how you do that, just the thing you really want to remember is that you want to give people two choices, which is convert now or convert later. And, you know, if later means leaving their email and coming back in a month, great. If later means, you know, viewing a video, reading a story, getting more convinced, then that's great too. As long as sort of the end goal is always in sight, right there.
Yeah, I want to put my two cents in also for agreeing with Tim about the video can actually be a very good multimedia addition, and it allows, while you're kind of searching for what you want to do, the ability to have both a video but audio, even more importantly, kind of telling the story. I mean, splash pages are, thank God, almost gone in most websites. Unfortunately, a few people still have it. But I think the real award-winning sites are actually incorporating the concept of the splash page, the telling the story, into a video or audio, or even using avatars. I know the Web Marketing Association, for the Web Awards, we used an avatar or in-person from Rovion to have a video spokesperson walk on and tell the story. It did not interrupt the flow of the site, but it was able to increase our conversions, and that's something I also read about the studies being done in the landing page handbook on the use of avatars, and I found that very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think a really good way to quantify whether or not you need that is to actually take a look at your site traffic and try and figure out what percentage of that site traffic is coming for the first time versus repeat users. And if the majority of your site traffic is coming there for the first time, you may want to, you know, include some sort of storytelling device, you know, be it video, be it flash, whatever. But if you've got a lot of repeat users, I mean, there's nothing more annoying than as a repeat user coming to a site with a splash page and having to sit through, you know, 30 seconds of, you know, like kind of the whole thing before you actually get into the site. Drives me crazy.
I'll make another quick note about the video. It's something that, at least in our experience, you absolutely have to test. And what I mean is, you know, some people have the video so they automatically start. Some have them so they don't automatically start, and you can click play. Testing the different size and the shapes of the videos, where they're at in the iFlow, which we just mentioned. You know, you don't want it to disrupt people, but it's nice to have it available. We have done some tests where we've made the video a primary thing on a page, and what has happened is that almost every single test has had a negative impact on conversion. I think one test was a 40% decrease in conversion. But when we have it available on the page so they can, at will, take a look at the video if they're interested, that's when it'll be the same or actually add like a positive impact to the page. So be really careful with the video. It's something you absolutely should, I would recommend a split test. Or if you were to just throw it up there, make sure you keep a close eye on your number. So if it's not performing as well, you can take it back down, even if you can't run like an A-B split test.
Okay. Let's move on to our next one here, Software Information Systems Movie Night Registration Form. Want to start us off, Jimmy?
Sure. On this page, this is one of those pages that it almost looks like it's not a complete page. And so one of the things that we say over here is, you know, a lot of people are focused on design, but we say your design helps communicate your value proposition or information about your company. So in terms of this design, it just looks almost like a blog site. It's the left nav is almost like it looks like it should be a full bar, but it's not. The font on the page is just it's all plain. It looks blog. I'm gonna call it blog style. There's no good headlines, no bullets, no good hero image, no emphasis. I mean, even the buttons, you know, they have the. Well, I guess there's a portfolio and case studies, but you know, just a register button. You know, those standard buttons don't do well. Very well at all in all the tests that we run. And so it just looks like ho-hum. And you don't want to deliver a ho-hum page to your visitors to your site. And so there's, you know, in terms of like the handbook, there is a plethora of information to help patch up this page in the handbook.
Yeah. I when we had gone through these beforehand, I noticed I use Firefox, and if you look in the date, time, and location, you'll see ASCII code in there rather than the check marks or, hyphens that they expected to have there because it didn't render correctly. I think one of the most important things that you can do when developing either landing pages or your entire site is to have someone, an editor or someone who has fresh eyes, reviewing the entire site. So you, and we're doing so in multiple browsers, so that you know what the people coming to your site are going to see.
Mm-hmm. There were a bunch of things in this one. To beat up on it for a minute here, the register button is below the fold. Those portfolio and case study buttons are where I would expect the register button to be, and can totally imagine myself filling this thing in and then clicking the case study button accidentally without even thinking about it, and then being sort of pissed off that I didn't get what I expected to happen, which was for the form to submit. And visually, because of where the fold falls, you know, unless you scroll down, you don't know how long that form goes for. So it sort of looks like it just sort of goes and goes and goes. So it doesn't give you a lot of incentive to fill the thing out. And now to, you know, sort of backtrack a bit, I can't really blame the people who made this site for the simple fact that this reminds me of sort of a classic problem that I see with a lot of people building sites out there, which is that their IT department gives them a template, gives them sort of this, you know, this framework that they have to work within, and doesn't really help with design. And it's unfortunate because if you're going to be making these things, they really do need to be designed to be landing pages. And if you do work somewhere where, you know, you're going to be making landing pages on a relatively regular basis and your IT department isn't really helping out. You can either do this one of two ways. You can either go to an outside source. You can bring in somebody for just a few $100 to design you a landing page and then plug that thing in. Or you can have your IT guys internally, you know, create a landing page template. There's a lot of things you can do for, you know, under $1,000, really pretty cheaply, to really crank up your landing pages and increase your effectiveness and get people to respond. Have we beat up on that one enough, guys?
No, agree with you 100%.
I think,
right.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to the next one. So this is another example of you know, a site where they didn't take out extraneous navigation, and sort of worse yet, you know, if you mouse over it, it covers up the text. So, and my favorite here, the clear fields button right at the bottom there. So this is not an urban legend. People really do still have those things. So, Jimmy, you got any thoughts?
Sure. On this one, we in terms of the layout and design, it's one of those. It would go back to your standard templates that you'd be given, you know, based on your developer or possibly your content management system, where the page most likely when someone's gotten here, they've already kind of clicked on the section they wanted to be in. So the left navigation most likely is not needed. It's just links off the page to take them away from what you would want them to do, which would be to complete this form. And then on the right-hand side, what we've noticed is on three-column designs, the stuff on the right-hand side is basically de-emphasized, which means they're just less effective or not effective at all. And so we'd most likely remove those two columns, and you'll probably get a lot more people through that form. Another thing we've done is basically based on our tests, we've run a bunch of tests on three columns versus two columns versus one column. And the one thing we've noticed is that three columns has almost never outperformed a two-column or a single-column design. So in overall design schemes, I mean, there are some rare exceptions to that, but typically a two-column design will do better. The single-column pages, it just depends on your business and the type of content that you're using, but that would be a few suggestions there. You go back down to your buttons, you know, remove the clear fields button. If you can use a button that has a drop shadow that looks very clickable, and going back to our size recommendations earlier, bump the size of that button up so it's really clear. All I have to do is fill out these, what, five or six fields and click the button, and then I'm done.
Mm-hmm. I think it's somewhat ironic that up on the top there, I just noticed that they've got the text size plus or minus buttons, which is great because, you know, especially on a healthcare-based site, you want to be able to pump up the text size. But, you know, the ironic part, of course, is that it's so small. It's like kind of hard to find and hard to read.
Yep, absolutely. When we look at sites, you know, if there's anything that you miss, it might as well not even be on the page. So in terms of usability, that's a great feature that you'll hear a lot of recommendations for. If you're in healthcare, you want to have those options that make it easier for people to read. But if they can't find the options, basically it renders them ineffective.
Yeah, actually, one of the things I think this could benefit from in a lot of these landing pages is some of the eye motion studies that Marketing Sherpa does so well. I guess you don't do it, but you've used them on landing pages. You know, really understanding where eyes start and where it goes to, I think is a really important part of designing landing pages as well as any website page, because people, you know, certainly have a way that they generally look at a page, and putting the most important information where they look first and where they look most is going to help you long term on your site.
Yeah, we actually use a company called iTools, and they're a really amazing partner of ours, and they included a bunch of different eye tracking heat maps in the landing page handbook. And we do partner with them for most of our books. If you are looking to do that, absolutely check out iTools. They're out of San Francisco, great company. And it's 2:57, so I'm thinking let's skip ahead here to our final slide here, which is a question from the audience. Is there some critical ingredient that supports a customer's decision to do business with one web company versus another? One site gets 6,000 orders for a product in a year. Another site gets zero orders. What would be the key differences in these two sites? And I'm just going to go out on a limb here and give my two cents. I would say that if all variables are nil, except, you know, one company gets a lot of orders and the other doesn't, and they're selling the same thing and all that, I would say it just comes down to branding, which, you know, it's kind of antithetical to most DR marketers, but You know, if you've got your choice between going to, you know, Best Buy or Crazy Eddie's House of Stereos, you know, you're going to go to Best Buy. So I really do think that the trust that a brand name carries is what makes that happen. What do you guys think?
I'll add a bunch to that, Tim. I definitely believe that the branding has an impact. The way we consider branding is your reputation. So, for example, I'm going to take, and this looks like an example would be like consumer electronics. I'm just going to use that because it makes it easier for this analogy. But if you go on a shopping comparison site like a PriceGrabber.com, a CNET.com, any of the sites that help you get the lowest prices on consumer goods, you'll see companies that have super high ratings and super low ratings. Obviously, you want to buy from a site that has a 5-star rating because it gives you an indication of are they established, are they a good company to buy from. It's customers' input about if they're a good company to buy from or not, and if it's safe to drop off your credit card number and your address at those sites to purchase. But the other thing that we've really seen in terms of, okay, why does one site get 6,000, one get zero, even if they have the same price, same rating, same everything, is your channel the traffic. And what we'll say is you don't have a business unless you have some sort of PTA, which is called a prime traffic advantage. If you don't have a prime traffic advantage, some relationship, some source of traffic, you know, maybe you're just absolutely excellent at pay-per-click, maybe you're absolutely excellent at email marketing or lists or, let's say, direct marketing or cataloging, there are some source of traffic that you have available to your company or your site that these other ones don't. And so you'll see it big time in electronics. You got some guys that sell all the same stuff from the same distributors. One might do, let's say, $10,000 a month in sales. One might do $10 million a month in sales. They sell the same products from the same distributors, but one is doing significantly better than the other. A lot of it has to do with brand in terms of when it comes to the buying decision, but the other piece of that is how they get people to the site before they make the buying decision. So, I mean, that's the big point that I would push is you got to go out there, build the relationships, find the channels of traffic to get people to your site, and the sales will start coming.
Okay. Bill, you got anything to add?
Well, I would just add, you know, one of the reasons why the Web Marketing Association runs our Web Award and our IAC Awards is to give people the opportunity to get third-party credibility. You know, winning awards is a great way to help establish a brand and help get people to, you know, take you seriously. And, you know, and that's one of the things that we're finding, and I agree 100%, is you want to do business with people you know or people you can trust. And that has to come through on every web page that you create, particularly the landing pages, when you're trying to get them to provide either some personal information or even financial information.
I totally agree. Tim, wasn't there something in the handbook about how third-party reviews, customer reviews, have a significant impact on conversion? I mean, I know that's from the site we tested. In terms of, and what I'm talking about, it goes back to your point about building trust. When you have third-party credibility, like the awards that you're talking about, that is a perfect example of how do you build trust with your customer when all you have is these products. Well, if you have these awards, if you have security sales, you have testimonials, you're going to start building trust with the customer. And it has, like I said, once again, a huge impact on conversion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if either you build your own reputation or you borrow someone else's. And, you know, if that means getting an endorsement from, you know, anyone from a celebrity to you know, some sort of accreditation agency, you know, that's a good way to borrow somebody else's reputation. You know, but if you can, you want to build your own reputation. But there's always going to be somebody out there that doesn't know you. So hitching yourself to, you know, a larger vehicle is definitely a good idea. But that said, it really does all boil down to trust. And how can you, you know, appear trustworthy and be trustworthy and, you know, and really, really promote your own successes. So there's lots of ways to do that, but I do think it all boils down to that. So I think that's going to wrap us up. We're right about at an hour here. So I hope everyone had a good time or at least learned something.
Yep.
And yep.
Before we go, can you just let everyone know if they are interested in buying the updated landing page handbook, how do they do that?
Well, that's a good question. Let's see. If they actually scroll up to slide 20, you can get right there. There's a link, or you can call customer service, or you can email us again, service@marketingsherpa, or just go to the website and pull it up that way. It's marketingsherpa.com. Pretty easy to find us.
I think there's going to be a follow-up email to this, and hopefully everyone will be getting that, and they can learn more about it by, I think, getting that email as well. That should take them directly to the sign-up page for that handbook.
I believe so, yes. All right, well, thanks, everyone. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate your input.
No problem.
And have a great day.
I appreciate it.
All right, bye, guys.
Bye-bye.